Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. That makes this the stuff they don't want you to know in the United States. This is Thanksgiving week. And as we always like to say in our listener mail segment, we are so thankful, fellow conspiracy realists, that you have joined up with us. We are going to have follow-ups to the Tyson recall. We're going to answer or explore, would be the more accurate term, some questions about global history. And before we do any of that, or on the way to doing that, we thought we'd switch it up and listen to some voicemails.
Yeah, which includes some of those topics. But guys, before we even do that, this week on Strange News, we talked about a little airplane incident where a plane had to turn around because of some damage to some windows. I'm just throwing in extra strange news right on top right here. It's super quick. Mm-hmm. There was recently a Boeing 747 plane that had to land, do an emergency landing and return because a horse escaped inside the plane while it was in flight.
Yeah, was this an OK Go video, Matt?
It was an OK Go video made real.
Or the John Mulaney bit about the horse in the hospital, but in the air. Yeah,
that's it. Yeah, I'm tired of all these MF and horses on my MF and plane. Anyway, you can actually go. There are a couple places you can go online to hear the air traffic control audio of the horse escape moment. So do check that out.
Can lead a horse to, never mind. Moving on.
All right. Hartsfield Jackson Airport is, I guess, go. Where you'd say. So yeah, let's jump to the phone lines, and we're going to hear a voicemail that is a response to the strange news segment we did on the chicken nuggets recall. Horrifying thing. Ben, just before we get into it, let's go quickly give a recap of what that story was about.
Sure. The giant food manufacturer Tyson recently recalled a great deal. Well, not a great deal, but a significant amount, 30,000 pounds or so, of chicken nuggets, specifically the roughly dinosaur-shaped Fun Nuggets. Due to it was a voluntary recall due to a small amount of pliable metal particles found contaminating the nuggets.
Yeah. What, they're pliable? What's the problem?
Yeah, should be fine. No, but there were actual injuries, right, associated with this recall. It's a serious thing. We just had somebody call in with some more information on it, with some experience. So here's a message from Lord of Enjoyment.
Yes, this is the Lord of Enjoyment calling. I'm calling about the, you guys can use my voice and everything, by the way. I'm calling about the chicken nugget recall. I'm a truck driver. I've been driving refrigerated food and freight, I guess, for a few years all over the country from all different shippers and receivers, Tyson being a pretty frequent one. So these people put out like the article that it's 30,000 pounds of the chicken nuggets that got recalled. One trailer of chicken nuggets or meat or of anything is about 40 to 45,000 pounds. So that's less than one trailer load of chicken nuggets. And one small plant could have like, I don't know, hundreds of trailers going out every single day, 24 hours a day. So that's like literally nothing. That could be, that's not even a day's worth of chicken nuggets that they send out from one small plant. And there's like, who knows how many plants that are like massive. So it's not really that big of a thing. And also about the chicken strips and the Tyson plants closing a year or two ago, that was due to a hacking incident where they were shut down because their infrastructure was compromised, like their software and everything. It wasn't due to like demand dropping or anything like that. So, yep, feel free to call me back. Feel free to use my voice. Enjoy, everybody.
That is illuminating because I had no sense of the scale of this kind of operation, A, and it also makes it make sense where it's like, okay, this one batch got compromised, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. I think the scale is the thing. When you try and visualize a plant that produces the stuff that becomes chicken nuggets, in my head at least, and I've seen the documentary footage, right? The how it gets made.
How it's made, yeah.
How it's made and all that stuff. Like, I see the scale within the factory, but I don't imagine that that much is pumped out and sent out to stores every day from one plant, right?
No, I certainly didn't, but it makes sense now.
But then it becomes a matter of, okay, let's say we've got one truckload of contaminated product, right? Where did that truck go? You could probably track that, it seems like, right? And you'd be able to just recall that one truckload rather than putting out a whole like warning to everybody?
One would imagine. I suppose it would, to your point, Lord of Enjoyment, I suppose it would depend upon how many or how the plant distributes the product into trucks.
Right? Oh, yep.
That's a good point because they could be coming off of multiple different lines and then sort of converging into like a chute that then is dumped into the truck. Again, this is not how it's done. They have to be refrigerated and packaged and all of that stuff. But you guys, have you ever gotten a foreign object, ingested a foreign object from prepackaged food or from like to-go food?
Ingested? I don't know.
Or come close to.
Yeah.
Perhaps come close to, like where you caught it and then you pulled it out of your mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same. It's terrifying. I once pulled like a staple out of but some sort of to-go food.
You got to stop ordering the staplers.
I know. Taco Bell. It's true. But like, that's terrifying. And I understand how it's more about the optics of doing the massive recall than it is about maybe the smaller recall would do the trick. They need to make a big show of it because they're banking on people really taking their word that they're never going to let this happen again. Or they're like doing the big move to make this go away. I think it's really funny. If you guys have ever been to IKEA, they post all their recalls in the giant elevator. There's like an elevator, like a big one that you can take your giant flat packs and stuff in. And there's always tons of little posted flyers talking about the items that they have recalled. And a lot of times it's like contained rocks, you know, like it's really funny how candid IKEA are about their recalls and how they put it like posted in the store like that. But it's again, it's because of optics, I guess.
Well, yeah, it's like we talked about on the Strange News episode. If you imagine you're Tyson, you cannot take the risk that somebody else is going to get metal, right? They're in their child's mouth by giving their kid a product. That's really, really freaky. And that whole, the note, I don't even remember what Lord of Enjoyment is talking about with the Tyson plant closing down, the chicken strips plant. It must have been when we did that episode on is there an attack on the food supplies?
It's possibly referencing that. Also, Lord of Enjoyment, I think you're referencing some of the previous mishaps that Tyson experienced. And going back to the issue of scale, after a certain threshold, you have to accept that there are just going to be bad things that happen, right? That's why the FDA is saying it's okay to have a little bit of rat poop in cereal, not a bunch, you guys, but we know mistakes happen. There's nobody's going to be 100% perfect is what I'm saying.
That is another horrifying thing that I haven't considered. The fact that the software infrastructure that runs all of the automated machinery in a factory could be attacked. And then the whole thing shuts down only due to the fact that the software doesn't function to actually produce the stuff anymore. And you can't get it to work anymore. Kind of reminds me of the infrastructure, like attacks on water treatment plants that we talked about, and power plants back in the day. But just with food manufacturing, I guess it's the same deal. Craziness.
It's true in terms of tactics that could be exercised and points of vulnerability. However, food manufacturers, we could argue, have a bit of an advantage, because if you go to, like, power supplies have a little bit of redundancy, right? And wastewater management, water management, there's redundancy there. The food supply of the United States, the way you think about it commercially, is a bunch of private entities, right, that are all trying to have their turf, or they're trying to encroach on other turf. So, you know, let's get into the other guy's dino chicken nugget business.
Slanging nuggets.
Right, slanging nuggets. So they're all incentivized, I think, to have their own kind of order of operations as much as possible. So, like, if someone flipped a switch for some reason, let's say there's like a terrorist group that just wants to bring down Tyson Foods. If they do that, there are going to be other things, other entities that sell the same stuff that's just not Tyson. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the food supply is, I think, a little bit more secure.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I think I'm just imagining a coordinated effort to attack the food supply if you hit factories like that. There was the fear, right? Like in 2022, the fear was that food factories were under attack, but it felt more like a physical threat, right? At the time. In this case, it wouldn't have to be physical at all. It could be virtual, which is creepy.
I mean, hell, the computers probably also, I think you're already saying this, and sorry for being redundant, probably control the mixture, you know, and the way the ingredients are blended and like all of that stuff. So you could like throw the ratio off, or like, you know, over deliver on one ingredient to make the thing like completely made of like fat or something. You know what I mean? There's like a million things you could do.
Well, then the company wouldn't be able to package it and sell it. Right. Because they're at every factory that creates a food product, they test the line, right? From the line of the product. So,
to the degree that they are legally required to do so.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Ben.
They test the chicken nugget slurry.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, hot dogs come from us. Oh, we'll get to it.
Yeah. Hot dogs. All right. Well, that's it for this segment. We will be right back. Thank you so much, Lord of Enjoyment, for letting us know about all of that stuff, giving us that insight. We'll be right back with more messages from you.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On-demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, the story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
And we have returned. A quick disclaimer for this one, folks. We're going to have to use multiple sources, and they all have to be anonymous. Thank you, anonymous sources. We know who you are. You know who you are. And you reached out to us. As we said to each of you, we're doing our best not to compromise your identity, nor your profession, nor your prospects. We're going to follow up. Lord of Enjoyment, we're going to take a cue from you and hear some more from people with on-the-ground experience related to industrial food manufacturing and a lot of other consumable manufacturing as well. Heads up, if you are eating a snack while you hear this next story in our weekly listener mail segment, tell us your experience of eating the snack. We're interested. So a lot of this comes to us via social media. Here is one source, just pulled a bunch of excerpts, and we can stop along the way and react to these, but they're eye-opening and maybe off-putting. So our first one starts this way. Okay, so off the record, I have firsthand knowledge, not only on the Tyson recall, but on many others. This source is responsible for a specific type of equipment, a couple of types of equipment that are used in production lines. One would be metal detectors, which are part of industrial food manufacturing, and the other is magnetic separation equipment. Have you guys heard of magnetic separation equipment?
No.
Oh, God, if we're talking about food production, I'm imagining meat getting separated, but maybe that's not it.
That's what I was thinking, too, because it reminds me of the ingredient list on some foods where you look at it and it says this includes mechanically separated chicken.
Yeah.
Okay, so these, from what I understand, magnetic separators in general, if I'm getting this correct, we are not experts. Magnetic separators in general are designed to recover magnetic material from non-magnetic matter. So if you think there might be some small pliable pieces of metal in your chicken paste or your hot dog slurry, then you run it through this kind of equipment that will be able to suck out the metal that reacts to the magnet.
In the food production line.
Well, yeah, like on the way. You know,
oh, okay.
Not
okay.
The final step, right?
Okay.
Hopefully it's before they cook it. And again, so that's one excerpt. Not the only person saying this. There were more people reporting that the problem or the issue goes bigger than this Tyson recall. Because to your point, Lord of Enjoyment, yeah, that's a very tiny slice of a very big pie. Shout out Domino's. We had another source who says, guys, it's not just Tyson. Many, many food manufacturers, pharmaceutical manufacturers, and chemical companies also have to use magnets and metal detectors because they remove components that might have snuck into the process. And they also remove fragments of blades. So like, yeah.
I guess that makes sense because, I mean, you know, the kind of equipment that we're talking about on a line like that, something could chip, right? You know, mm-hmm. or like the tip of something could. I mean, I've certainly, have you ever tried to open a can with the tip of a knife and mm-hmm. broken the tip of the knife off? And then you're like, well, I guess I'm not going to eat this spaghetti sauce because there's a special surprise in there somewhere. And I don't really feel like sifting through spaghetti sauce by hand. If only I had one of those magnetic extractors.
Separators. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Keep them separated. Shout out to, who is that? What was that band?
That is The Offspring.
PhD in chemical engineering.
And a hot sauce impresario.
Mm-hmm. Many things, many things. Regular Dolph Lundgren. That guy. So Dolph
I was about
Lundgren.
To say regular Diddy Kong, and I meant P. Diddy. Sorry. Carry on.
These are perfect. These are examples to aspire to. So we also learned from someone who is in the business, a different source, who said, here is how this is a business. Because one of my questions was, is this not rarefied air? You know, like there are a few big companies who make most of the processed chicken in the US. Are there not just a few companies who do like compliance with these kinds of standards and safeguards? It turns out that the way a lot of these folks get business is they read super sexy government reports on a pretty regular basis coming from the FDA. If you were recently reading a book and you thought, this is too good, this is too much of a page turner, I need something to help me sleep, and I'm worried about contaminants and melatonin, then we highly recommend for tonight's Reading Rainbow segment that you check out the Food Defect Levels Handbook published on FDA.gov. It is not a page turner, and it will help you find some slumber, I think.
Oh, dude, this is Title 21.
Yes. Yes, this is. Matt's a big fan of Title 21.
Yeah, that's, I don't know what
previous episodes.
Wasn't that something politically in the news, like Title 21? Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
It's like whenever there's a slow news day or a particularly meme level story that goes viral, then that's when we get inundated by this very specific governmental language. And I've got to be honest, I don't know about you guys, but I forget a lot of it. Because so much of it sounds so very similar, you know?
Title 21 is the thing, maybe I'm wrong, it's the thing that we reference, or we talked about at one time. Oh gosh, it was Agenda 21 or something like that, but then there was a real thing called Title 21, which has to do with the allowable amounts of horrible stuff in food products, right?
And Agenda 21 is a United Nations thing.
Yes, exactly.
Guys, it's like sports jerseys. You got to differentiate your numbers, okay? You're confusing the fans. So shout out Pusha T. So the, actually, that makes no sense. I'm shouting out a line from Pusha T's Diet Coke song, which is great. You guys would love it. So let's continue with this idea. This tells us that there is an entire industry of people who are, one source called it ambulance chasing. They're waiting for the FDA to publish a cavalcade of recalls. And then they go to these companies and they say, hey, I heard you're having a hard time, buddy. You got some like blue rubber pieces? You got some metals in your nuggets?
That'll cost you extra.
Well, AP is sure interested in that, or they would be.
So it's weird too, because the companies, the reason, Matt, or in that earlier thing you said, the reason we had to point out these companies are doing exactly what they are required to do by regulatory bodies, there's a source that pointed out, look, I often hear about these companies after something has happened. They are reactive rather than proactive. Nobody is saying, hey, let's make sure that in, you know, the next 5 years, all our chicken nuggets are metal free. Let's do it right after something happens. And let's say, like, what's the good price to get us across the finish line this year? I know.
Just shaking my head over here.
Yeah, Matt's shaking his head over here. Noel, how would you rate your emotional state with hearing this?
Indifferent.
Yeah.
No. Shocked and or awed.
It's strange, too, because, you know, this immediately reminded me, I don't know about you guys, but it reminded me of a book called The Jungle.
Well, sure. Yeah, it comes up all the time. It's like the first expose blowing the lid off of meatpacking at a time where there was like zero oversight. That stuff's terrifying.
Oh, you guys, we got a voicemail from someone who goes by Trucker Joey, another trucker out there. Thanks to everybody on the road that's listening.
It's his brother, Trader Joe. There's Trader Joe and Trucker Joey.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So he at the very end of his message, talks about going up to the break room at some of these meat processing facilities, specifically like slaughterhouses where cows and pigs get, quote, processed. And he describes this. Oh, I don't even want to say it. It's going to upset people if I say, he describes this blade that is like a V, like this really long V that the pigs are just attached by their hoofs, their feet, as they go up this conveyor belt, and their necks just kind of pass through this V that slices the whole thing off. It's just like was. Because they're alive when it happens. It's not like they're dead before.
Oh, right.
Wow. Yeah. I thought, no, wait a minute. I thought they
bled them out.
I thought they slit their throats and bled them. No.
The only way you can know for sure if that happens is if food is rated halal or kosher, to be quite honest.
I was
going to
say, so that's almost more like a bespoke way of killing the pig. You pay extra for that, right? Otherwise, all bets are off and you're going to have the freaking Caligula murder lawnmower machine.
Well, local organic interest will probably have a more quote unquote humane way of processing the animal. But yeah, it's the industrial food or livestock system is pretty horrific. And this goes to an excerpt from an expert who says the smell at these facilities is surreal. It's death-like. It's disgust. And, you know, everybody. Well, not everybody, hopefully, but a lot of us listening know that death does have a smell. And there's a necessity to this widespread horror, the argument goes, because it is feeding not just the United States, but the world in an intricately connected global network. And do people want to know that the food they get at the grocery store goes through magnets or metal detectors or X-ray machines? I think a lot of people, to your point, Noel, would probably be indifferent if it was seen as a safety measure and if you knew that resulted in less dangerous delicacies.
I was being demure. I'm not actually indifferent. It's easy to get numb to this stuff because it does feel so confounding and out of your control.
I feel you. There's one of the stories from a commenter that really stuck with me was seeing half alive birds on a process line, being where, you know, the food is going through. So somehow a bird.
You missed a few.
A bird. Yeah. That maybe it was a bird that wasn't supposed to be in the production line the same way like dolphins might get snagged up in fishing nets.
It's like when you get an onion ring in your french fries. Yeah. It's only much more macabre.
But one of these is a pigeon wing. Right. And then what's the old line? Well, don't tell the other customers, sir.
They'll be jealous.
Another example would be, because we did get a lot of responses for this. Another example would be Kraft Mac and Cheese had a recall from, I guess, one of their plants out in Illinois. And they were getting flakes of aluminum in the Easy Mac and Cheese cups because Kraft was using something to like pre-bake the product, and it was depositing aluminum flakes inside the actual mac and cheese.
Y'all, boil some water. For the love of God, boil some water. It's not that hard.
Yeah.
I think we're all on board with that, you know, in general. Actually, if you want to be super safe and a little bit Howard Hughes about it, you should just be boiling water all the time. We're very lucky to live in a place where you can drink it out of the tap. Last few things, the FDA, we talked about how they have a tolerated amount of insects. They have a tolerated amount of vermin feces or rat feces. I was not aware of this. They have apparently a tolerance for choke hazards. It is 7 millimeters by 25 millimeters.
Like, otherwise you have to warn about it?
Like, otherwise you have to do something.
Okay.
So that is just, if you want to take a, sorry, I've got a cat on me. We can keep that part in. That is 7 millimeters by 25 millimeters. Is pretty huge, especially if you consider that there would be younger people eating this stuff. You know what I mean?
I'm going to read this to you because it's that time of year.
Yeah.
Oh, God. This exact FDA thing you're mentioning here, Ben. Mm-hmm. For apple butter, here are the levels. When it comes to mold, you are exceeding the limits of the acceptable mold. If there is a mold count of 12% or more,
yeah,
you're exceeding the rodent filth if there is an average of 4 or more rodent hairs per 100 grams of apple butter. And if there are an average of 5 or more whole or equivalent insects, not including counting. Yes, go ahead and say it.
No, you do it. You do it.
Not counting mites, aphids, thrips, or scale insects per 100 grams of apple
because
butter.
Because they're so tiny?
I don't
know. Well, you know, there's probably a couple of court cases and email arguments about this where someone goes, look, okay, fine, if you add up all the mites, okay, I get it, but is that fair to American business?
Oh, my God, the broccoli stuff. Don't read this. Don't read this, everybody.
Read it while you're eating right now. Get like a big can of like a stew, something with a lot of ingredients, Denty Moore perhaps, and read this. And also know that mammalian poop is separated sometimes, not mechanically, but regulatory separated from just rat poop. So rats are like the Kobe Bryant of pooping in your food.
They've got mammalian poop listed here for cinnamon bark.
Well, I mean, that just means it tastes like shit. It's not very. No. Look, what's the takeaway here, y'all? We've all definitely consumed rat feces before.
As far as a takeaway, we have mentioned this in the past. The one last thing I wanted to shout out before we do a takeaway is our source who said, look, hot dogs are made from a pumped hot dog paste, which is called slurry in the industry. So just think of that next time you have a hot dog. And now we get to our takeaway. Before we dive into a bit of heavier history, we would like to hear your stories of strange things you found in your food. We would like to hear your take on the regulations, because some people will say, hey, regulations are bad for business. Other people will point at things like the jungle. And what better way to end this story in our listener mail segment for this week by shouting out once again, Upton Sinclair. Dude, if he was alive, if he was on Twitter right now, I feel like he would have a hard time not saying, I told you so. We're going to pause for a word from our sponsors. We'll be back with one more message from you.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
She's breathing right now? Yes, she's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
And we're back with one more message from you, and I'm going to just jump right in to reading it. Hi, I know the Palestinian-Israeli conflict is super touchy and seems to make people very emotional and myopic, but I was wondering if you folks could discuss the Balfour Declaration and British Mandate of Palestine. These are historical occurrences, not conspiracy theories, and you guys are awesome at talking about things objectively, so hopefully it wouldn't be a controversial episode. Thanks, STDWYTK's Muslim fan. I love the way that's written. It's like the implication is that we have one Muslim fan. I hope that's not true, but I do thank this listener for writing in, and personally hipping me to a topic that I was woefully unfamiliar with, and I don't know, let's just address the elephant in the room. It's true. The Palestinian-Israeli conflict is super touchy and does make people very uncomfortable and can be very polarizing and hard to discuss because there's horrible things happening over there to women and children and people, civilians, you know, who are getting caught in this crossfire that is a historical conflict between Israel and Palestine. And there seems to be a tendency to want to favor one side over the other, whether it be family ties, you know, religious ties, ethnic ties, whatever it might be. And I understand that. But at the end of the day, both sides are pretty shitty and doing pretty terrible stuff. There's no question about Hamas, at the very least, and the Israeli government, who have been doing things poorly for quite some time. It's a gnarly conflict that's very complex and very rife. And what's going on right now is inexcusable and really, really hard to see. And it's also hard to talk about because it is... There's almost an insistence to come down, you know, on one side or the other, and to, you know, and to say this is what's right. These are who the good guys are, and I just have a hard time seeing quote unquote true good guys on either side. I think that Hamas is behaving and is you know conducting operations like a terrorist organization, but Israel is retaliating with such aggression and such just horrific violence and malice and disregard for, you know, civilian life. I can't support them either. I don't know. But to our listeners' point, I think it is a very interesting thing to just talk about the history of this and how far back this conflict goes and how it essentially resulted from imperialism, you know, from or colonialism, I guess, rather, you know, on the part of the British. And that, you know, after World War One and because of certain promises and diplomatic, you know, rewards, I guess, like, you know, how things are divvied up, the whole idea of to the victor go the spoils. This Balfour Declaration is a fascinating piece of literature. It's a letter. And Ben, we talked about this offline. This is something that you studied in school, you know, during your international affairs studies. And I was hoping you might lead us off. I've done some digging and research into it myself, but this is definitely something that's very much in your sphere of expertise.
Yeah, sure. On November 2nd, we just passed the anniversary of what is called the Balfour Declaration. In 1917, then Foreign Secretary for the British, a guy named Lord Arthur James Balfour, wrote a letter to Lord Walter Rothschild. And it's a very short letter. It is
of the Rothschilds, right? Just right, throwing that out there. Okay.
Right, yeah. And the letter just reads the following. And again, this is a letter from two aristocrats, or from one to another. It says, His Majesty's government views with favor the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people and will use their best endeavors to facilitate the achievement of this object, it being clearly understood that nothing shall be done which may prejudice the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine or the rights and political status enjoyed by Jews in any other country. So it's like, it's making three promises, and you could say they're kind of necessarily vague. I don't know, because it's a short letter. Like, that's the bulk of the letter. And again, you know, it might be surprising to some people that this was written in 1917. So right. This is well before World War II.
That's right. But it had to do with, like, rewarding assistance overthrowing the Ottoman Turks.
Yeah, yeah. The Ottoman Empire. They were a huge force for a while, but the Ottoman Empire is no longer around today, despite whatever barnstorming speeches Erdogan, who is the leader of Turkey right now, might make. The Ottoman Empire, street named Turkish Empire, back in the day it was a huge, huge deal, and they controlled the part of the Middle East pre-World War One that the British took over.
And then, you know, the French were involved too, and it was really all about kind of carving up the Levant, you know, mm-hmm. carving up this piece of very oil-rich land in advance, kind of making deals to divvy up this land and literally writing checks that they couldn't cash, because the British didn't own or operate or have any claim to this land that was occupied by indigenous, you know, people, right?
Yeah, they also, I mean, yes, the British were, again, very much a colonial, as you said, imperialistic power. And the Ottoman Empire, in their view, had already fumbled because they sided with what were called the Central Powers in World War One. The Central Powers are Germany, Austria, Hungary, Bulgaria, and the Ottoman Empire, even though it was in decline at this point, was a very big player in Eurasia, the Levant, you know, the Middle East entire.
Got it. And I also just want to say, too, like, I mean, I think we mentioned this or we discussed this a little bit off air. I think one reason that this stuff is very polarizing is because people either have incredibly strong opinions one way or the other, or they don't know enough and feel terrified they're going to say the wrong thing. So I would err on the side of asking questions, being open about not knowing all the things, as I am trying to be. I only just recently realized that Zionism was sort of a political persuasion, or at the very least a political movement that sprang up around this time, which was, you know, very much spearheaded by folks like the Rothschilds, or this Rothschild in particular, the idea that the Jewish people deserved a state of their own. Is that right, Ben? Is it as simple as that, or is there more nuance to it than that I'm missing? The idea of Zionism.
It's much more complex, to be absolutely honest. Like, there is there is a great deal of nuance regarding that in terms of which historical explanations one accepts, in terms of which perspectives one adopts. And throughout, the problem is with that discourse, throughout all of it, there is a continual tenor of Islamophobia, of anti-Semitism, of racism and discrimination. It can be very difficult. I love your point about asking questions in good faith. That's what we must endeavor to do. We know for a fact that the Balfour Declaration, the consequences of it and the intent of it, they're still up for debate today, even in 2023. Oh, I mean, the right. British government, we know that they were hoping this would galvanize American entry into World War I.
And I believe the British government, at the very least, kind of stands by it and borderline celebrates it, and that folks who would consider themselves Zionists also consider it to be a positive thing, the thing that led to the formation of the Jewish state, you know, of Israel. But it also, the point is, and a lot of folks, you know, will debate on this, is that the British promised a piece of land that they did not have the right to promise. And then they went through their typical kind of colonizing path and essentially committed ethnic cleansing, you know, and wanted to just get rid of an inconvenient people in order to keep a promise to who they viewed as very important allies.
Yeah, to that first point, they called it the British Mandate for Palestine.
That's right.
Right, yeah. And maybe we can talk a little bit, we were mentioning this off air, maybe we talk a little bit about how it seems the United Kingdom was selling a lot of different things to a lot of different people, you right. mentioned.
Yeah, right. The French, like, well, again, there was, the French had suffered greatly, you know, because of their participation in the Great War, and they wanted something in return, right?
Yeah,
it's I know I'm simplifying, but I think it's important to sort of simplify a little bit so that people can at least you lower the barrier of entry, and then once you kind of get your head around it, then you can go in and dig deeper. And there is so much nuance, so I think that's why it's a hard thing to discuss. But I'm just trying to break the ice a little bit for me, at least, you know. And please, any listeners, if I'm coming off sounding like an idiot on any of this, I'm coming at it from a place of wanting to understand.
You don't sound like an idiot, man. I think a lot of people are having the same questions, you know, and sometimes it can be scary to ask those questions in good faith.
Well, Matt, you've been a little bit quiet, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot. And I know, you know, we've talked off air about how difficult some of this stuff can be. But do you have any questions? Are there any things that you would love, like a little clarification, and that might help you feel more comfortable talking about this? Or I don't know. I'm not saying that you even have to do that or should feel that way. I'm curious.
Yeah. Don't force me to talk if I don't want to. No, I mean, this is my job. I am quite frankly uncomfortable talking out loud about this because I don't feel that I know as much as I should before I open my mouth. Right. Right before this, we were in a corporate training, and one of our colleagues that we respect and care about a whole lot raised their hand and said, "Hey, I just want everyone to know." We were in a sharing moment in this training that we were doing. This person said, "I am of Jewish descent, and I am very uncomfortable with how, you know, everything is going. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say." This person was very honest and expressed that nothing feels good about what's happening right now on any side. This is horrible. This is awful. And all I want to do is not talk about it, but I guess we need to. I think that's maybe how I feel right now. I'm in the stage where I don't know what to even say.
I totally understand. And I think, you know, we've even gotten some emails and some communications of people saying, very conspicuously quiet on the, you know, the Palestine-Israel issue. And first of all,
people
that's not
told
true.
Us they're not going to listen anymore.
Well,
people have been
first
calling
of all,
in.
That's not true. We have talked about it in ways that feel appropriate, but it also is so big. Does it feel appropriate to do a conspiracy episode on this even? Like, it feels capitalizing in some way. I don't know. Maybe That's what I'm trying to avoid here, too, is like dancing around being politically correct so much that you actually don't accomplish anything, because I don't think we ever are capitalizing on anything when we do these topics. We're genuinely curious. We're genuinely trying to understand the world better and help folks around us to understand the world better, hopefully. So I don't see it that way at all. But there is this pressure to like talk about it and to have a stance.
Well, one thing we all have to remember collectively, and this goes for every conspiracy realist tuning in, all of us on the show, everybody who makes this show happen, is that to a large degree, social media has been weaponized. I was talking about this over on Twitter. It must inherently be considered another theater of conflict now and going forward, to the point about feeling like it is somehow wrong to say, I do not know enough about this. I would like to learn. There is nothing wrong with that. Humans are great at learning. It is one of the primary superpowers of the species. And as we said, when we first covered this newest iteration of this very long conflict, people have more in common with each other than they have differences, right? You have more commonalities than you will ever have differences. And that is simply, part of that is a result of evolution, right? Of biology and so on. And part of it is a function of everybody's higher goals, your aspirational goals. No matter where you go around the world, people want safety, right? People want their kids to have, hopefully, a better life than the life they had. They want security. They want food. They want to have cool stuff to do on the weekend. You know what I mean? They want to feel cool when they hang out with their friends. And that's what I think one of the main things to take in here is. The Balfour Declaration is a story of its own. It's a whole series, and there's been a lot of literature about it, especially considering what a short letter it is. Like, seriously, would you look at it? It's like 60-something words.
It's one of the first things that people say about it. Like, we're talking about what an impact it's had, you know?
Yeah, and so that is an exploration all its own. I think one of the most important things to realize and to really keep front of mind and in your core is that, yes, we have more commonalities with each other than we do differences. Everybody ultimately wants to have a good life, right? And it's important to remember those commonalities. Oh, God, you know, before 2016, I could have said it's important to remember those commonalities will always trump the differences. But whatever would be a better synonym than Trump at this point.
No, I'm with you. And, you know, my kid just posted a thing about this, you know, like, I mean, all this reposting and stuff. And people, I do kind of resent, though, the implication that people are saying, if you don't speak up now, right the second, and say the thing that I want you to say in the way that I want you to say it, then you're part of the problem. I don't think that's fair. I think people can exercise empathy in lots of different ways and, you know, help without having to stand on a soapbox. You know, and I don't mean to sound like anybody that's speaking out on this is soapboxing. That's not what I mean either. It's, I feel like I'm going to get dinged for literally everything that I just said, and that's part of the issue. It's hard, but I really hope this was in some way helpful. And to me, it was helpful to bring it back to the, like, learn about the history of it, learn about how a lot of these things, this conflict that's been just, you know, metastasizing, you know, for 100 years, started with self-important British, you know, imperialist, bureaucrats just writing a letter and promising a thing that it was not theirs to give. So thank you. Again, thank you to STDWITK's Muslim fan.
One of many.
I would like to think so.
It's true. It's true.
I know it is. I know we've heard from many, many folks out there, but I really think this was very educational and an opportunity to talk about this in a way that didn't feel like, okay, here it is, the Palestine episode. You know what I mean? And not to say that that won't happen once we get more information and once we have a real perspective, but I don't know. That's something that we'll have to all really discuss and decide whether it feels right.
And of no relation to our East Palestine episode about the epidemic of train crashes in the U.S. So also, yes, thanks to every single conspiracy realist, thanks to the multiple anonymous sources who wrote to us with some somber and frightening experience in the world of industrial food and drug manufacturing, including thanks to Lord of Enjoyment. This is Thanksgiving here in the United States as this listener mail segment publishes. We hope it finds you healthy. We hope it finds you happy. And you know what? You don't have to eat turkey. Turkey is like a severely commodified thing of Thanksgiving. Perhaps a story for another day. We want to hear your thoughts. We try to be easy to find online.
We do, and I think we are. You can find us at the handle Conspiracy Stuff on X, FKA, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook. We have our Facebook group. Here's where it gets crazy. We are the handle Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram and TikTok.
Do you like calling people with your phone? Well, you can call us. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. When you call in, you've got 3 minutes, say whatever you'd like, just give yourself a cool nickname and let us know if we can use your voice and message on one of these listener mail episodes. Can't wait to hear from you, Hermit. I know it's incoming. If you don't want to do that, why not instead send us an email?
We read every single email we get. We cannot wait to hear from you. Send us the pictures, send us the links, take us to the edge of the rabbit hole. We will do the rest. Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
Is he breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Join late night legend Jon Stewart and the best news team for today's biggest headlines, exclusive extended interviews, and more. Now this is a second term we can all get behind. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.